Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, today we have with us Kristen Severin. I just want to mention our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please do not call in unless we ask for calls. But we're going to be talking today about influenza vaccine, and the influenza season's upon us. The government is suggesting that everyone gets their influenza shot. And, of course, they're telling even pregnant women, be sure to get your influenza shot. If you have a six-month-old child, get your influenza shot. If you're an older individual, oh, we're really here from the government. We're here to help. You get your influenza shot, because if you don't take it, you might die. Well, of course, the trouble is, well, anyway, I'm going to let Christine tell us a little bit more about it. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
I guess it's evening in Ohio, not in California.
No, well, it's getting there. It's getting a little darker here. It's a cold, stormy day, which is unusual for California. But anyway, we need the rain, and that's, of course, is going to bring the spring flowers. But tell us a little bit, how about you got interested in this subject of influenza vaccination?
Well, with my background, I'm a pharmacist in Ohio and Kentucky. And on top of that, I have a PhD in biopharmaceutics, which is involved training and research in pharmacology, toxicology, and drug kinetics. And for 10 years, I headed up a national vaccine, consumer vaccine information organization, nonprofit organization called Vaccine Policy Institute. And during that time, I was researching and writing on vaccine issues. I would attend up to about a dozen meetings in Washington, D.C., and in Atlanta, Georgia, for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, government commissions which determine vaccination policy for the entire country. And I would also research issues in the medical literature. I published a newsletter, had a lot of pieces published in newspapers around the country. And the vaccine I think that I researched actually the most was influenza vaccine, and I found out through my research that the vaccine really does not work very well and can in fact be harmful. And what the government is doing to assist the drug companies, the government knows that the influenza vaccine does not work very well, and year after year they can't sell as much, they can't even give away these shots, and there's a lot of vaccine that's left over. So what the government keeps doing is increasing the list of people, adding to the list of people who they say should get the influenza vaccine. And pretty soon, it's going to be everybody in the country who's going to be recommended to get this shot.
But now, really, I thought that the government was there to help us. Are you suggesting that some of the motivation for recommending vaccines for pregnant women and for very, very young children and the elderly has to do with the profit motives and the profits of the vaccine companies?
Very much so. You'll find that in the Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, a number of these individuals who set vaccination and drug policy for the country actually are financially involved with the pharmaceutical companies. People think that the FDA is here to protect us from these big bad pharmaceutical
companies. Hold that thought right there for just a minute, please.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Christine Severin, and she has her PhD. She's a pharmacist, and she is licensed in several states. But for many years, she's been concerned about what's going on as far as the vaccination policies. that our government is recommending, and she attends these various meetings of these various groups, and these meetings put on at the CDC and other government agencies, where they are recommending, oh, everybody should take these vaccines, the influenza vaccine specifically. And as Christine had pointed out, these vaccines really don't work very well. Number one. Secondly, they usually are for the wrong influenza virus, because they have to guess 6 months or a year ahead of time what the epidemic is going to be. But the real tragic situation is that the motivation that she believes, and I certainly concur, for these government officials working for the FDA is not to protect your health. These people, many of them have relationships or have people on the boards who have strong relationships with the drug companies. Many of the people who work for the FDA, when they leave the FDA, get a nice, comfortable job working at an inflated salary for the drug companies. And unfortunately, in Washington, D.C. today, we have some of the finest bureaucrats that money could buy. But even if they were just simply taking our money and... But what harm are they possibly doing? And that is the thing I really want to talk about today. You were told, oh, you have to get this influenza shot. The media cooperates and creates the hysteria. Oh, you better get there. There's a shortage. You may not even be able to get it to protect your life. Well, pick up the story there.
Yes. Part of the problem that I have seen in the research I have done, and periodically you'll actually see the government admitting this, if you can get them to do that, the government tends to only cite studies which promote its purposes in all of this. You will not see the government citing studies that are out there plentifully that show that influenza vaccine does not work very well. And in fact, one of the meetings that I had attended at the U.S. Public Health Service headquarters in Rockville, Maryland, I privately spoke to a U.S. Public Health Service influenza researcher who had given a presentation at the meeting, and I asked him just one-on-one out in the hallway that I've noticed that the government selectively chooses which studies it puts forth to support its views on flu shots, influenza vaccine, while ignoring the conflicting studies.
Hold that thought just a moment as we bring other stations back on board.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this afternoon is Christine Severin. We're talking about the influenza shots, and Christine is pointing out that as she attends these meetings very often, and she notices that there are scientific studies. Most of the scientific studies show the influenza vaccine is not only not very effective, but sometimes there are complications from it. And yet, she was talking about going to one of these meetings, and after the meeting, going out and talking to one of the so-called government experts and pointing out the fact that they were very biased in which scientific studies they used to justify official policy, when there are many studies on the other side that show that the vaccine was really ineffective. And pick up the story there, please.
Sure. When I asked this gentleman very politely, just one-on-one, about this issue, that I've noticed that the government selectively chooses which studies it puts forth to support its views on influenza vaccine while ignoring conflicting studies, his response to me was two words: of course. And it was at that point that my eyes were opened up, and I realized that our U.S. Public Health Service intentionally sets out to deceive the public about the true effectiveness of influenza vaccine. And one of the things that I did in researching the influenza vaccine, I actually made a trip to the National Library of Medicine in Bethesda, Maryland, near NIH headquarters, National Institutes of Health, near Washington, D.C., to try to get studies that I couldn't get locally. And but one of the things I found is that the effectiveness is absolutely horrible with regard to influenza vaccine. As you said earlier, the government basically looks into a crystal ball approximately a year before the Food and Drug Administration and the CDC get together and give to the drug companies which viruses they want in that year's vaccines.
But of course, they may or may not be the virus that's going to sweep the world, is that right?
That's exactly right. So what they do, they look at viruses that are infecting pigs and chickens and people over in China, and they try to predict close to a year ahead of time whether or not that virus is going to infect people in Monterey, California, or my home of Dayton, Ohio. And sometimes, and more often than not, they usually get it wrong. And even if they do get it right, which isn't too often, the effectiveness of influenza vaccine, according to the government, is it can be up to 70 to 90%. But that's only in healthy people when the viruses are chosen correctly. In the so-called frail elderly, that's the nursing home people, and they encourage all old people to get their shots. The government admits it's only effectiveness. You're lucky if you get 30% effectiveness. It's awful. And when they check, when people come into, say, an emergency room or your doctor's office, and they happen to culture them for influenza, you'll find out that more than half, and sometimes I've got here in 1 year, 87% of the samples were not similar to that in the vaccine. For influenza B, that's another influenza virus, 76% of the isolated samples were not similar to that in the vaccine. This was in the 1994-95 flu season. Another issue is with regard to effectiveness here. The government says that the influenza vaccine is approximately 70% effective in healthy persons less than 65. If there is a good match between the vaccine and the circulating viruses. But again, they are only going to cite you the studies which put forth their view that everyone should get influenza vaccine. So depending on the study cited, vaccine effectiveness actually ranges from a low of 0% to a high of 96%. So, and if you, and the efficacy drops, the effectiveness drops to 30 to 40% among the elderly, and those are the people that they target. So and I've got another study here for you of a type A influenza vaccine in nursing home patients. This study showed only a 27% efficacy effectiveness, with four studies showing effectiveness at 0%, 2%, 8%, and 9%.
Now, of course, they're going to tell us that, 35,000 people die every year of influenza. But are those figures accurate? Are they simply making them up? You know, people are always making up statistics, and I suspect that there are people working for government whose real motivation is to get people to take these shots, not because they're going to help them, but because, you know, they're going to get to somewhere down the line some special benefit. And, of course, when they use that figure, 35,000 people are going to die of influenza, is there any truth to that?
Well, the 35,000 that they use is actually an extrapolated figure, because most people, a lot of people don't even go to the doctor when they get influenza. Number two, if they go to the doctor is not going to culture the organism to make sure that that's what they have. So that's one issue. Another thing that they're doing is they're extrapolating a low number into a high number, and they lump in what they call influenza-associated illnesses. So it is, I would call it, a rather bogus number, and it's inflated to basically scare the public. And another thing that you have to look at with all this, the bottom line is influenza vaccine really preventing death in the elderly? And, well, there's really no way for them to know. It's impossible to prove if flu shots increase life expectancy in the elderly. Are they really preventing death? Number one, you've got 90% of pneumonia and flu deaths occur in persons age 65 of age and older.
But, of course, are they dying of influenza? Are they dying of pneumonia? Most people are dying of pneumonia, not of influenza.
Exactly. Well, I'm saying what they call, they use the term PNI, pneumonia and influenza deaths. Well, 90% of these are occurring in older people anyway. And another thing you have to look at is that 65% of all deaths from any cause are going to occur in old people. I mean, none of us live forever. Therefore, I mean, I heard one older gentleman told me, you know, that pneumonia was the old person's best friend. and I don't mean to be cruel or anything, but none of us are going to live forever. So since 65% of all deaths occur in people, basically two-thirds of all deaths are going to occur in old people, people 65 years or age or older. So there's no way that the CDC can tell you whether influenza vaccine is keeping older people from dying. In fact, one study that was done on Medicare patients in Ohio and Pennsylvania showed, and this is a quote, "No demonstrated effect of influenza vaccine in preventing death or limiting the length of hospital stay." And I have the reference for that. And so basically, even the government studies show that flu shots do not prevent older people from dying.
Well, then, of course, you know, what we're doing is getting an awful lot of people to take an awful lot of shots unnecessarily. What we're doing is wasting a lot of money. But the other thing that bothers me is, are there any complications associated with the use of influenza vaccine?
Well, what's very, very interesting, if you back in the when President Gerald Ford in 1976 advised that everybody get the, remember the old swine flu?
Right, right.
Okay. And they advised that everybody in the country, even I didn't even know any better. I was, so I had just graduated from pharmacy school, and, you know, you're very naive when you just graduate from college.
You think that everything you're told is true, and I'll
exactly.
Know that, but you think you've got so much knowledge, and it takes a long time to learn that much of what you learned really isn't true.
Yes, sir, that's correct. So I naively went and stood in line at the local, you know, community center here in Cincinnati, Ohio, and took that swine flu shot. And then what they found out later is that thousands of people sustained a paralysis called Guillain-Barré syndrome from the swine flu vaccine. And that was just in 1976. And then what was found out later is that a lot of people got damaged from it. The swine flu never really materialized. So basically, a lot of people were damaged for nothing.
I think that's one of the most incredible stories. Basically, what happened was, well, there was one person who died over in Hong Kong from this flu, which apparently had been transferred from a pig to a human being. And based upon that, they panicked and they said, well, if one person died, 100 million people might die of this worldwide. We've got to come up with this vaccine, and they did. And then they had to sell it to the people. And the trouble is, the epidemic never materialized. So they were all only off about, you know, about 999 million people. There was only one person who really died of the swine flu, and that was in Hong Kong. And they created a worldwide panic, just like they're doing with the bird flu epidemic at the present time. And everybody is just frightened to death. And, of course, some people are going to really benefit from this, what's going on. That would be Donald Rumsfeld and George Shultz, who happen to own stock in the company that makes Tamiflu. Isn't that interesting? You know, but, of course, why should we be surprised? So, anyway, certainly I remember the swine flu epidemic. Fortunately, I've never taken an influenza shot. I never have any intention to, and I don't get influenza.
Exactly. No, I never took any after that. And like you say, you learn as you get older. And I learned how naive I was. So, that's, you know, you just have to learn and you go on. Another issue that's been coming up is that these flu shots, some of the manufacturers use a mercury preservative in it, which can cause brain damage. Another issue which people are bringing up is the aluminum. There's aluminum in these vaccines. And one study actually showed that older people who get flu shots on a regular basis have a higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease. And one school of thought is that too much aluminum that builds up in your brain could be one cause for Alzheimer's.
And if there's anybody who would like to question that, we'll be glad to send you a copy of the abstract by Dr. Fudenberg, who's an 80-year-old dean of vaccinologists, and where he shows 1,000% increase in Alzheimer's disease. If you want to challenge it, call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you the page of the abstract. Well, Christine, you know, certainly this idea that vaccines could do harm is so foreign to the way I was taught, and I'm sure the way you were taught. But after you get out in the real world and then you begin doing your research on your own, you realize that so often the material we get is very, very selective. Have you suddenly, I'm sure you're well aware of that as you talk about going to these meetings and seeing how they ignore the studies that show it's harmful and they only tell you why it's beneficial. Have you gone at all into Dr. Fudenberg's work or any of the other work? And certainly I share your concern about other, we don't know whether it's the mercury or the aluminum or what it may be in, with the elderly, but there's a dramatic increase in the incidence of Alzheimer's disease, at least according to Dr. Fudenberg. And as I mentioned earlier, any of our listeners who want to challenge that, go up on the internet and pull down Fudenberg, F-U-D-E-N-B-E-R-G. F-U-D-E-N-B-E-R-G, or if you can't find it, why you call us and we'll get that abstract for you. This is not very well known, though. This is the frightening thing. I don't think most people have ever heard that.
Well, one other issue, there's a, before your listeners leave us, I'd like to let them know about a new book that just came out this year by a mother in Wisconsin whose son was damaged by the childhood vaccines, and he's now 44 years old with the mental capacity of a 7-year-old, and he's lucky, but he's a quadriplegic. He requires constant care, and the name of the book is A Stolen Life. And in this also, some of what the conflict of interest that we were talking about among vaccine government vaccine policy-making bodies, she covers that a lot in this book, and I would highly recommend that people go to her website and try to pull this down, especially for any new mother or any new mother, father, grandparent that wants to share some of the bad that could happen with vaccines in their children.
All right, what is the basically, what is the website that you're
The call? Website would be www.dptshot, that's dptshot.com. I'll say it again, www.dptshot.com. And the name of the book is A Stolen Life. And it will really open your eyes. I wrote a foreword to the book for the author and talked about some of my experiences attending vaccine policy-making meetings and other issues. But and the woman that wrote this book too was on, also has attended and was on one of the is a consumer representative on one of these boards, and she's a savvy lady, and she's just trying to help other people, basically other parents, not have to go through what she went through. So,
and you only need to talk to a few of the parents who've had children who've been damaged by the vaccine shots. And of course, certainly it would be in influenza, but it was in so many of the shots until more recently when supposedly they've taken it out of childhood vaccine. But of course, they left it in the influenza vaccine. And since they acknowledge it was potentially harmful, I don't understand why they recommend a shot for a child, for a 6-month-old child with a potentially very dangerous or toxic level of mercury. There is no safe level of mercury, in my estimation.
That you are right, and a lot of this is just politics. You know, we can sacrifice a few children for the overall, what they look at overall good of universal vaccination. Basically, we can sacrifice a few people for the good, a few babies
hold
for
that,
the good
hold
of
that
society.
Thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I guess this afternoon is Christine Severin, and she was just talking about a book. It's called A Stolen Life. It's written by a woman whose son is now in his 40s, and of course he's got the mentality of a 7-year-old, and of course she's written a book, and we're saying that the book is available at www.dptshot.com. That's www.dptshot.com. And I'm certainly going to try to track the author down and try to get her onto our program. This is one of the greatest tragedies of modern time. 1 in 6 American children, according to the CDC's own admission, 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality and or a behavioral abnormality, and about 1 in 6 American children has asthma. But the CDC says they have no idea why it's happened. It's an epidemic. It's terrible. But we can assure you that it has nothing to do with the vaccinations. It has nothing to do with the mercury. Just trust us, because after all, we're from the government, and you know why we're here. Well, certainly as you've been again to study this, I'm sure this must be infuriating to you to think that anybody would be doing things that would be harmful to children. And the cover-up of this at the national level and by the controlled media really is rather frightening and shocking, isn't it?
Oh, very much so. It's scary and it's depressing. And I think one of the most depressing things that I've just found out was that our Congress just passed within the past week in the middle of the night a bill which will protect all the pharmaceutical companies and the vaccine companies, drug companies, when they give any investigational vaccine, including a bird flu vaccine, which we might be all forced to take whether we want to or not. And if something happens to you that's bad from one of these vaccines, the Congress has just given the drug companies immunity.
Of course, there is Senator Frist, who is being investigated for conflict of interest in his own personal affairs. He is the Senate Majority Leader. They've tried to sneak this through in the Homeland Security Act. There was an outcry from the people. And now, of course, they've come back. Why would they do this in the middle of the night unless they were trying to hold something? And why would anybody want to take a vaccine from a manufacturer that was excluded from being held responsible for killing or damaging your child permanently?
That's the problem. Is that that's the reason that they have to pass these in the middle of the night. And another issue, you say, why would somebody choose? The problem is with many vaccines, and in a lot of states in this country, you have to vaccinate your children to get them into school. And there's many of the health occupations. If you want to go into nursing, pharmacy school, dental school, medical school now, you have to receive vaccines. There are, I was asked to prepare a brief a few years ago for a union up in Canada that was their members who were, EMT workers, were being forced to take influenza vaccines or they were going to fire them from their jobs. So the point is that in many cases we don't have a choice. And so now we have a new bill which protects the pharmaceutical companies from any harm that they put on you or your children. And what's very interesting is back in 81, I guess it was, I can't remember the date so well, but it was early 80s, passed a bill that protects the drug companies from being sued for any damages that occur from vaccinations, childhood vaccinations. So now what they've got now is what was just passed here a week ago. It even closes any lawsuits even more. So now that the drug company, it was just basically a gift from our Congress to the pharmaceutical companies. And citizens now aren't even going to be able to use the Freedom of Information Act to discover whether a new bird flu vaccine was safe and effective. I know I wrote multiple letters back in November. A lot of people wrote letters trying to, and I think that's probably since they knew that this was very controversial, that's probably why they passed it in the middle of the night.
Well, I think that's the old adage of he who pays the piper calls the tune. And ladies and gentlemen, we have in Washington, D.C., politicians who are, get a great deal of money from the drug companies so they can run for office, so they can stay there. And most of the politicians aren't dedicated to the right or the left. A conservative or liberal, they're just dedicated to staying in Washington, D.C. We have a totally corrupt system. I mean, do you honestly think that somebody's going to give $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 to a politician and they're not going to get anything in return for it? Do you honestly believe that? It's about time that we demand this system stop, that nobody outside of a congressional district can give any money to a congressman or to a senator unless you actually are one of their constituents. If we don't take America back, who's going to protect our children? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Kristen Severin, and we're talking about the vaccine problem. We're talking about legislation within this last week that was passed in the middle of the night to give immunity to the vaccine manufacturers so that no matter what they do, even if they intentionally came up with a vaccine that they knew would be harmful and would kill millions of people, they have been protected by the government. Now, why would they do that, and why would any thoughtful person take a vaccine if they knew that the vaccine manufacturer had no confidence in it, and of course it put out a great deal of money, and believe me, they buy the support of our politicians, you know, to protect themselves for a product they're going to put on the market? Would you, for instance, you know, buy a car from a manufacturer that was included that could not be held responsible, even if, of course, a number of people got killed in that car? Would you actually want your child riding in that car? And of course you wouldn't. And you wouldn't take a medication that had created tremendous problems, but especially if you knew that the manufacturer did not have any confidence in it. I hate to think that we have to use lawsuits to protect ourselves, but unfortunately, when a society loses its moral foundation, when we no longer have right and wrong, when we excluded the Ten Commandments from the walls of our courthouses, when we've excluded the Ten Commandments from the walls of our schools, in fact, the only place you're going to see the Ten Commandments publicly displayed is on the doors of the Supreme Court, the very Supreme Court that's outlawed this Ten Commandments every other place. But be that as it may, we've got a real problem. And, of course, who's going to be responsible for the health of our children? Well, Christine, you must be talking to a lot of people across the country. Are people upset about what Senator Frist has done, this so-called surgeon, this great altruist, who, of course, is the House, pardon me, the Senate Majority Leader, and is thinking of running for the presidency? I hope everybody will put the word out. We would not want a man of that low caliber even to consider running for our presidency.
I'm with you, 100%.
Well, how are we going to get the people to understand what's really going on behind the scenes?
I think what they have to do is start reading. They can't just take at face value what their physicians are telling them. They need to ask physicians questions. They need to go to different websites and consumer organizations that can help educate them on the other side of the vaccine and medical issues.
But the thing is, the average physician doesn't know. I know physicians. I've worked with them. I've cried with them. I've laughed with them. They're doing the best job they can, but they're not getting the truth from their medical
organization.
Well,
you're right about
that. Hold
that
thought right there.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just talking to Christine about the fact that most doctors really want to do well by their patients. I never knew a pediatrician who wanted to hurt a child, but when the Academy of Pediatrics assures that the pediatrician that vaccines are completely safe, that there is no evidence that mercury harms anybody, that certainly that the vaccines are doing a great job, and that certainly if you care about the children, why you should recommend an influenza shot for every child at 6 months of age. The doctors really don't know. That's why it's up to the people listening to this program and to get the information, to get it to other people, and then try to educate your doctor. The information is there. We've got voluminous information. Where should people go on the internet, Christine, to get the facts?
Oh, there's lots of organizations out there, but one of them is, for example, this book I was telling you about, the dbtshot.com. There's also an organization called PROVE, P-R-O-V-E. I can get you that website here shortly. If you just put vaccines into your search engine, it'll pop up a number of vaccine organizations too. There's National Vaccine Information Center, NVIC.org. They have a lot of good information. There's also Think Twice. THINKTWICE.com. That particular website has anything out there with regards to books on vaccines for the consumer. ThinkTwice.com. And then, like I said, there's an organization called PROVE out of Texas, P-R-O-V-E. That should pop up on your search engine, too. And I believe that you can get to them with vaccine info, vaccineinfo.net.
And there's a nomercury.com, I believe.
Yes.
It is nomercury.org. I don't remember it's com or org. But here's a family, that a doctor and his wife, who have dedicated their life to this because of their child being damaged. And, you know, they've got a lot of tremendous information about this, about
yes.
the influence of mercury destroying the minds of so many children across America. Ladies and gentlemen, 1 in 6 American children has a neurodevelopmental or behavioral abnormality. Those are the CDC figures. And, of course, they run a spectrum from ADD to HDD, utter learning disabilities, to reading disabilities, to speech disabilities, to Asperger's disease, to frank autism. But 1 in 6 American children, how could that be? And where is the outcry from the media about that? And
what's interesting about it is that what we've done over the years, since now virtually all children receive vaccines, we've traded acute diseases, which most children would recover from, for these long-term chronic diseases, which you spoke of, the asthma, the ADD, the autism, and other issues. And if you just, when you're popping these children with multiple vaccines at during their first 2, 3 or more years of life, there's got to be problems involved with these in your immune system. Something else which gets us away from flu shots, the government now is looking to vaccinate young girls for cervical cancer, which you know is a sexually transmitted disease. And so now they're already vaccinating from birth little babies against another sexually transmitted disease, hepatitis B. And the way that bill got passed in Ohio, you talk about sneaking things in, they had to add that mandate for hepatitis B vaccine to a hazardous waste bill. And there was no, they didn't even hold hearings on the bill, and until I went and saw our state representative, who was chairman of the health committee. But to make a long story short, they had to sneak that in because it was so unpopular. So now we have a situation where babies from birth, literally in the delivery room, or in the nursery, are being given a vaccine for a disease which more than 95% of people aren't going to see in their entire lifetime. And the way that hepatitis B vaccine got recommended is that for all children is that the government found that when they recommended the vaccine for the high-risk groups, meaning the promiscuous homosexuals, heterosexuals, and the IV drug users, they couldn't get those people to come into the health clinics to get these shots. So they said, okay, let's give it to all little babies under the assumption that every baby has the potential to become a drug addict or a prostitute. And so basically now, well, not basically, all children in the hospital, unless you specifically tell them you don't want this shot, your baby is receiving a vaccine for a disease that if they don't sleep around and shoot up drugs, they will never see in their life.
And, of course, the thing about hepatitis B is that it is a genetically created, it is a recombinant vaccine. It's made basically of one gene from the shell of the HIV virus, of the hepatitis B virus. Unfortunately, that molecule that they are injecting into the child is very, very similar to the molecule that about the myelin sheath, the fatty molecule of myelin sheath. So you get what's known as molecular mimicking. And
right.
The body then recognizes that we're supposed to build antibodies to this molecule and then begin attacking the myelin sheath. And there is no vaccine we have that there is more autoimmune response to, and a dramatic increase, at least in adults, in lupus and in multiple sclerosis. Actually, nurses who take the hepatitis B vaccine, 300% increase in multiple sclerosis in nurses who take the hepatitis B vaccine from those who don't. But, of course, they're not told that before they take the vaccine, and now they have no recourse at all in that. Certainly, they know that so many of our people, you know, are getting all these autoimmune types of diseases, dramatic increase in lupus in the adults. We don't know about the children. This is a vast experiment on the children of this country. And I think that somebody should be held responsible. But when was the last time you heard anybody in government even getting fired, except maybe when they told the American people the truth, they were whistleblowers, and then, of course, they bring the wrath of the government down on them?
That's exactly right. If you want to be in the system, you can't speak out. And conversely, if you speak out, you can't be in the system. They will get rid of you.
All right, Sydney, you must be talking to a lot of people about this. I'm very, very concerned about hepatitis B. Do you think that we're reaching people and they are protecting their children by saying, no way? And we tell, in fact, when my great-granddaughter was recently born, I called back and I said, under no circumstances, allow them to get that hepatitis B in the nursery. Do you know if we're having any effect? If more and more parents are beginning to understand the danger that we're subjecting their children and their grandchildren and the great-grandchildren to?
I think perhaps that might have something to do with these bills that are passed in the middle of the night in Congress, because people are starting to learn, and people are starting to say no. And periodically you'll read in the newspaper of these concerns that government officials and pediatricians have when parents question vaccines. And what you were talking about, the physicians with pediatricians not intentionally trying to harm people, and they're just busy people. That actually was confirmed to me by a pediatrician who, I don't want to get into a lot of detail, but he did say to me that the way that the doctors look at things, since they're so busy in their practices, they look at these bodies that recommend vaccine policy for the country. He called those groups of smart people. That was the term, smart people. And these smart people make recommendations for everyone, so they pretty much just have to trust them.
Well, I think that maybe we should stop trusting those people, and we should stop trusting doctors who trust people, because many of those smart people have a vested interest in feathering their own nest. And
exactly
look at that
right.
Wonderful increase in the price of their stock that they hold, or this wonderful job they're going to get, or certainly the grant they're going to get for research. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a corrupt society. We have a society that's turned against morality. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest is Christine Severin. We're talking really about the influenza vaccine. Have you considered at all the implications of this new recommendation that's come out now from the American Obstetrical Association, from the Pediatric Association, American Academy of Pediatrics, recommending that every pregnant woman get a influenza shot? Is there any evidence that it's safe?
I was actually at a committee for the CDC in Atlanta that recommended that. And, it scared me to death. And, they tell pregnant women not to drink, not to smoke, not to take any drugs without their doctor's permission. A litany goes on and on and on. But yet they want you to get this influenza vaccine. But the reason that, well, at the time there, they presented a study at this meeting that shows that pregnant women who happen to catch influenza during the flu season have, it's just a very slightly higher incidence of hospitalization. So what they do, they just say, okay, all pregnant women need this influenza vaccine. But let's go back to what we said at the very beginning of the show. They might not even have the correct viruses, the correct influenza viruses for that particular year in the vaccine. It might not even be effective. And what if you're getting an influenza vaccine that, say, has a mercury preservative in it or something? I personally don't trust. I would not trust any of my children when I was pregnant getting an influenza shot. And something else, I don't know if you know how these shots make you feel. You sometimes will run a fever, you're sore, and does it make sense for your body to be dealing with making these influenza antibodies, and then you have colds and other issues going on around in the community? I knew of one particular case. This was a gentleman in his 90s who, faithfully, every year got his influenza vaccine, got the shot. 2 weeks later, he caught pneumonia, and a week later, he was dead. So I don't know if what now the medical people and the government people would tell you that, well, you know, he might have had something anyway or whatever, but I don't know.
Well, I think the thing about the influenza shot is, first of all, if you take the shot in the first trimester when that a child is just beginning to be formed, the brain is beginning to form. Now, we're told, of course, pregnant women should not eat more than one can of tuna, you know, a week or a month or something like that, for fear that they're going to get mercury in it. Oh, it could harm the child. And yet, of course, they're giving them a shot with 25 micrograms of mercury, which would be concentrated in the brain of that forming child, and they may get 1,000 or 2,000 times the maximum allowable amount, according to the EPA. Why would you do something like that? Where are the studies that's showing it's safe for women to take mercury, you know, that amount of mercury, you know, during the first you know, trimester of pregnancy, as you go into the second and third trimester, well, you're still getting toxic doses, but during the first trimester, as that is beginning to be concentrated and in the fetus and in the fetus's brain, what are the implications of it? Where are the studies showing it's safe? And I don't know that there are any studies.
There are no safety studies for a lot of these shots. And when I asked at one of the meetings I attended at the CDC at the time, I asked the gentleman who was ahead of all of the vaccine distribution for the whole country. I asked them at one of these meetings about the effectiveness studies, and it's on a transcript. He acknowledged that the effectiveness studies for influenza vaccine, flu shots, they're just not there. They have not really done effectiveness studies.
Then why are they doing it? Or is this a mass experiment on the people of this country, on the children of this country?
This is a mass experiment on every one of us. And a wonderful physician who died here a few years ago, he was a public health physician, but was not in favor of mandatory vaccinations. He mentioned to me one time that, unfortunately, these are just massive experiments. Once the drug companies make their money, they sell these vaccines, and they make the money. And then when they find out something's wrong with it, well, they've already got their money. They don't care.
And because they are protected now, you cannot sue any vaccine manufacturer, you know, unless, of course, you've taken this to the vaccine court. Right. They have a special court with a special fund of many billions of dollars to compensate the families of these tragic victims of the immunizations. The trouble is the government will fight you tooth and nail, and then it'll take you years and years to get to the court. And then by the time you get to the court, the statute of limitations has run out. Everything is done to protect the vaccine manufacturers, and nothing is being done to protect our children.
That's correct.
Well, you know, I really think it's about time the American people really began to look into this. And you can get up on the internet, you can check these things out, or later on we'll tell you about the things that we have. We have four tape sets on autism, interviews with the parents of families that have these tragic children. We have, you know, four tape sets on mercury. We have the book Evidence of Harm by David Kirby. Do you know that book?
Yes. And in fact, I believe that gentleman, if I'm thinking of the right one, was on a few months back, was on, I think it was Meet the Press on Sunday morning.
Yes, he really was.
It was fascinating. But what's one of the things that's not brought up often by the media is that some of the people that they quote as being advocates for vaccines are the very people that have conflicts of interest with the pharmaceutical companies. So there definitely is a cover-up by the media. But another thing I think one maybe has to think about is when you listen to the radio, read the newspaper, or television, that's the biggest one, it seems like every other commercial is for drugs. And is the news media on these networks, are they really going to bite the hand that feeds them?
Absolutely not. In fact, if you come out in your newspaper or your magazine against the drug companies, they'll cut off your advertising.
Exactly.
And this is the way that the world really works. And they will come after you with, you know, with tong and nail, you know, and you better be very careful. And this is why many times, if you write the articles, you can't get them published. I've talked to investigative reporters, you know, who try to get these articles published in the major media, and they will not carry them. And, of course, I've talked to scientists who are trying to do work in this, who've done scientific studies, and suddenly they find they can't get grants from the government.
Yes.
And, you know, and then, of course, people try to get books published, can't get books published. So this is why I believe talk radio is the last means we have of really getting the truth out to people across America, which is why I do what I do and why I'm so glad you came on with me this afternoon, Christine. Well, we've got about three more minutes. You just hang on there. We'll wrap up the program, and then we'll let you go and get all the things done that you have to get done here after the holidays. And I really do appreciate so much your coming on with us.
Oh, I appreciate you giving me the time, and hopefully people follow up on some of these websites we've talked about.
Hold on. We'll be back in just a minute, and then we'll three more minutes. We'll let you go. Well, our guest is Kristin Severin, and we're talking about influenza vaccine. We're talking about this whole spectrum of vaccines, but specifically, why are we taking influenza vaccines? I have not taken an influenza vaccine. I don't think I've ever taken one, and since I ordinarily take a lot of vitamins and garlic and things of that sort, echinacea, I just don't get the influenza. Now, basically, do you have a website or any place you'd like to perhaps have people go to get more of your information?
What I would really like people to do at this point is to go to the www.dbtshot.com. That's where I would really like people to go, and that's going to really open up their eyes on the cover-up that's going on with government officials and with the harmful effects of vaccines.
All right, fine. So that's www.dptshot.com.
Right, dptshot.com.
All right, fine.
Yeah, and
that's a good place to start. Go ahead.
That is a good place to start, yes. And another one is a website called Prove. Their information is at vaccineinfo.net and also thinktwice.com. But the first one, if you want to learn about the cover-up and harm and how giving your child a vaccine can just render them totally mentally and physically handicapped for life, and the cover-up between the pharmaceutical companies and the government, it'll break your heart.
And I think what people have to understand is that every child is not going to have a reaction. The children who have reactions are the ones that have an abnormality in the metabolism, and they can't handle it, they can't excrete the mercury. And, of course, if they can't excrete the mercury, why then begins to localize in their brains? And the tragedy is so many families, because this is genetic, will actually have two or even more children with this. And you probably run into that situation as well.
And what's very interesting, the government will tell you that unless your child basically keels over with the syringe in their arm, that you go ahead and vaccinate the rest of your kids.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's the last thing you want to do. Well, we're out of time, Christine. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, and God bless you, too.
And I hope we get you on to some of our other programs in the not-too-distant future.
I would enjoy that. Thank you.
Bye-bye. God bless you. Okay, fine. Well, that was Kristin Severin, and, of course, we've been talking about the danger of influenza shots, and right now they're doing gets you everything they can to get you to give them to yourself and to your family. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Kristin Severin, and of course, we've been talking about the influenza shots. Let me suggest some of the things that we carry to give you the information that you need to know to actually be able to discuss this intelligently. We have two excellent four-tape sets on mercury, interviews with professors and with researchers and people who've really done a lot of looking into an evaluation of what's going on. Dr. Mark Geyer and his son David Geyer are certainly two of the leading researchers in this entire field. And when you realize, of course, that the CDC does have a data bank, they know the harm they're doing, and they're concealing it. you can understand why many of us feel that the Centers for Disease Control really is not on our side. They have a different agenda. These are people, of course, march to a different drumbeat and dream a different dream. And there are many people out there in this country who really believe in population control. There are too many people. We've got to dramatically cut back on the number of people in this country and throughout the world. And they're totally unconcerned about the harm that they're doing. We certainly have the book, Evidence of Harm. We recommend it to you. We have a great four-tape set on autism, and it's interviews with the people, parents. There's one of them is an obstetrician. And she'd been practicing obstetrics and gynecology for 13 years, and then she had two children, both autistic. And so she's given up her practice completely to take care of these children. And the doctors who do this are looked down by the other doctors because, after all, the CDC says that vaccines are perfectly safe, and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the AMA and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, they all say there's nothing to worry about. How could you be right and they be wrong? Let me tell you, I practiced medicine. I was in medical politics, and very often people who have a political and truly a diabolical agenda will get into key positions in those organizations and use those positions to actually further their agenda, which is not in favor of the health of the people. I mean, there are good people there, too. And eventually I was able, of course, in my battle dealing with the AIDS epidemic, to bring the doctors around to my position and back my position that we should begin treating the AIDS epidemic as a public health issue. And we got a standing ovation from the House of Delegates, the California Medical Association, but it didn't do any good. They had no intention of trying to stop what was going on. 500,000 Americans have died of AIDS. Another million are infected. Millions more are dying, will die in this country and throughout the world, in what I refer to as an unnecessary epidemic. If you have not read my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, I suggest you get it. I also suggest that, to put things into proper perspective, you get the talk we've done. It's called Planned Population Reduction. It's 2.5 hours of me talking, but there are a lot of graphics and other things there that really make it quite a professionally done presentation. Let me suggest that you will never look at the world through the same eyes again. If you see the production, Planned Population Reduction, it's available either in video or on DVD, and you, of course, can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope you go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet, certainly the American Freedom Network, Genesis Network, Radio Liberty Network, and, of course, Republic Network, Republic Broadcasting, RBN Live, I believe, is their website. You can now get our programs on Telstar 5. If you want more information on that, give us a call. It's a satellite, and we're up there 9 hours a day, and you can hear Joyce Riley and Pastor Butch Paul, Chuck Chrismeyer there as well. Our programs are available on MP3 format on our webpage at SoundWave. Tell others about our program. Tell them about what's happening. If you're concerned about children, find out, could this really be true? And if it is, what are you going to do about it? Are you going to write to your congressman? Are you going to join us in this epic struggle for the survival of Christian civilization? Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.